Matt and Andrew are going to take us through our Bible reading, but it's a Bible reading with a difference. If you've got a Bible, it's in the book of Kings, second book of Kings, chapter 5, but we've got it in poetic form today. The story of the man called Naaman. Matt and Andrew.
Naaman was a mighty man, as hard as nails, a fighting man. Expensive clothes, a healthy tan, an early sort of Essex man.
A self-made man of high regard. He'd won his spurs fighting abroad. The king made him, as a reward, commander of the royal guard.
One morning, stepping from the shower, proudly glancing in the mirror, to check he wasn't getting old, Naaman felt his blood run cold. There was a blemish on his arm. It showed up white against his tarn. He felt his heartbeat race in fear. He gasped, he even choked a tear.
It mustn't be. Oh, help me, please. I can't have caught that skin disease.
But as the weeks went by, he knew his worst of fears were coming true. He had to face it sooner or later. The king's commander was a leper.
Well, Naaman wasn't one to leave it there. He set his mind to find a cure. Consulted experts far and near, driven on by desperate fear that now he could no longer be in charge of his own destiny.
Doctors came and wrote prescriptions, suggesting cures of all descriptions. Each one offered something new, an ointment or a pill to chew, relief from stress, peace and quiet, a cheese and tapioca diet. His private nurses gave injections, because Naaman had the right connections and could afford the best of medicines. And it was to no avail. They were all doomed to fail. Naaman's wife was sat one day, idly passing time away, as wealthy people do, when a servant girl, a Jew, in fear and trembling, came and asked if she could speak. The lady of the house had nothing else to do, so she said,
"Yes, but make it quick."
The little girl then spoke to her of God, timidly at first, but her conviction showed,
"If Naaman was to seek God's help, I'm sure that he would find his leprosy was cured."
So waiting till they were alone, she told her husband what the girl had claimed. The words had hardly left her mouth when Naaman was on his horse and heading south, bearing letters from his boss, the king, addressed in person to the king of Israel, with explicit orders that he was to heal the leper Naaman by name. And so post-haste he came, among God's chosen people looking for a cure. Quite how they could help, no one there was very sure. The king of Israel began to sweat, then asked to be excused. And when he got outside the door, his face turned a sort of royal blue. He had no idea what to do, but everybody knew that if he didn't, he was dead.
Even God's chosen people panic when the pressure's on, because the memory of what God can do never seems to last for long.
Eventually, this shocking news was brought to old Elisha's ears. Elisha was a prophet, a friend of God, just a bit eccentric. Some would say religious nutcase. Two sandwiches short of a picnic, one leg short of a tripod, one cabbage short of an allotment, one bulb short of a chandelier, one bone short of a skeleton. Do you get the picture?
"Send Naaman down to me,"
Elisha told the king.
"God can sort his problem out, so stop your worrying."
So Naaman, with his entourage, rode out to meet the man of God. No one dared get in his way as he hurtled down the road. When they reached Elisha's house, nothing was stirring. It was quiet anyway, not a soul around. No welcoming committee to be found, just one old servant looking out the gate. This put Naaman into quite a state, especially when the servant said,
"Elisha's rather busy, but he's given me this message. I'll read exactly what it says. Tell Naaman, mighty man from Syria, tell Naaman the leper, that by bathing in the river Jordan 7 times, his health will be restored."
With that, the servant shut the door. Now Naaman, as you can imagine, at this point rather lost his cool. He hadn't ridden all this way to be made to look a fool. He started ranting. He started raving, shouting things like,
"Jordan River, I will never touch that foul, polluted stream. Back home we've 1,000 rivers, fast and deep and above all clean. I'll bathe in any one of them. Come on now, we're going home."
Too proud to do what God commanded, he turned for home empty-handed. Still diseased and doomed to die, he knew the cost he would not pay. What would everybody say when word got out that he'd obeyed a God whom he had never seen? And what if he didn't come up clean? It surely wasn't worth the risk, trusting in a God like this. His servant said,
"You must. We do believe you must. If he had set you something difficult, you wouldn't give a second thought. But now you turn and run away because the man of God said simply go and wash."
And so it was this mighty man, as hard as nails, this fighting man, took off his cloak, took off his shirt, took off his pride, thinking, now or never, plunged into the Jordan River. A gasp, a hush. Now everyone could see this once proud soldier's skin disease. 6 times he immersed himself, nothing changed. Then as he rose the 7th time, water dripping from his hair, he heard the watchers start to cheer. He looked, he saw, his skin was clear.
Let's give him a big hand. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. Any agents out there, you can see me later. Or perhaps don't call us, we'll call you. The story of Naaman. Let's just have a think about what's been going on in that story. First of all, I wonder if you can share with me, imagine what Naaman thought when he looked at himself in the mirror. I guess that the Naaman that we find at the beginning of the story was pretty pleased with himself. He had it all. Naaman was the boss. Naaman was in control. Naaman was looking good. Anybody remember the fawns looking in the mirror? Ha! Naaman was a bit like that, I guess. If you're too young, Google fawns later. Looking good. Naaman was making it. It was all going right for Naaman. At least that was the surface image. That was what he wanted people to see. Naaman was somebody who had it sorted. And that was certainly the image that he wanted to pass on to everybody else. But actually, you know, there was more to Naaman than that. Naaman, like the 4 people up the front here, had something that people didn't know about him. We'll come to that in a second. Naaman was somebody who liked to be in the driving seat. And anything that upset that wasn't good as far as he was concerned. And, you know, that might be a bit like you and me. Maybe that's the impression that you and I want to give to everybody, that you and I are in control. We've got it sorted. And that's how we want people to see us. Jesus had some words to say about that. He said, actually, if you want to follow me, you actually have to do things differently. You have to move out of the driving seat of your life. Now that is a bit of a challenge. Because as I say, Naaman liked to be in the driving seat. And don't you and I like to be in the driving seat? Don't we like to be in control? But you see, underneath it all, Naaman had this secret. Something that not everybody could see. Something that not everybody knew about him. However much he thought he was in control, actually, he wasn't. Because things were going wrong under the surface. And when Naaman looked in the mirror and was honest, he realized that actually, the image wasn't what he wanted. He was unwell, physically unwell. Now, what does that do to a person? If you and I get ill, I guess that had an effect on Naaman, and it may well have made Naaman someone who was actually underneath the surface, not confident, not super in control, but actually he was frightened. Maybe even we could go further and say, not just frightened, he was desperate. Because it was an incurable disease. He had a problem. He didn't know how to fix it. That was unusual. It's a horrible position to be in, isn't it? When things don't work out the way you and I want them to. When we don't feel in control. When we, like Naaman, feel helpless. And isn't that actually how so many of us feel under the surface? Isn't that the secret that so many of us have hiding there inside? That actually we feel a bit more like Naaman there than we do like Naaman in control. Jesus said the way to deal with that is to come to me. So if you're sitting there thinking, yeah, that's a bit like me. There are things that I would rather people don't know about me. There are things that aren't right about me. There are things that are uncomfortable. There are things that I feel completely helpless about going on in my life. Jesus has an answer for that today. He says, come to me. But if you come to me, it's on condition. It's on condition that actually you move out of the driving seat of your life and you let me drive. You move out of the driving seat of your life and let me take control. Because Jesus says that's the only way you're ever going to get that sort of life that you really, really deep down want. He says the only way to do that is to hand your soul, your life over to me. To hand it over and let me be the one in the driving seat. That is tough, isn't it? It's difficult to actually hand over control of my life to allow Jesus to be in control. I hate not driving when I'm in a car. I have to be the driver if I'm in a car. I like being the driver when I'm in a car. It is very difficult for me to sit in a car and be driven by someone else. I find my foot stamping on the brake. Do you do that? Yeah? You want to be in control. You find yourself thinking, no, you would have brake quicker than that. No, brake now. When they don't. Or you find yourself saying, move out into the other lane and let's overtake this person in the, you know, but if you're in the driving seat, that's one thing. If you set aside and allow Jesus to take control, then you have to trust him. You have to allow him to be the driver. And you know what? You cannot be a backseat driver. You a backseat driver? Don't they get on your nerves? When somebody says, that was a yellow light, you should have stopped. Or somebody says, are you in the right lane? Or somebody says, and I think what my wife said to me the other day, but somebody says such and such in the car. Doesn't it drive you around the twist? That's not how it is to be with Jesus. If you hand over your life to Jesus, then just like Naaman, you do what he asks. Even if he seems to ask the strangest things. Naaman, go and bathe in that grubby little river 7 times and you'll be made better. Well, Naaman took a bit of convincing, didn't he? He wanted to hang on a bit to the control. I'll bathe in other rivers. What if I bathed in this? No. God says, this is what I want you to do. And that's what we need to learn from Naaman. We need to learn that if God is in control, he wants to be in complete control, and he wants us to trust him completely. And that's the message of the story of Naaman. You see, Naaman got his life back. Naaman got healed. Naaman got all the things that he couldn't do for himself because he was prepared to step out and put God in control of his life. And that's a story, that's a truth that lasts not just from Naaman's time. That's a truth that lasts right down to this minute, to this day, now, here in Christ the King. And if you're sitting there thinking, wow, wouldn't it be great to be able to lay aside all those things that bug me, all those things that worry me, all those things that upset me, all those things that I can't do anything about, then the answer to you folks is, do what Naaman did. Put God in control and then see what happens. So there's a thought for you to take into the week ahead. When things don't look like they're working out, who's in control? Who's actually in control? And who is the best qualified person to be in control of your life? Surely the person that made it in the first place. So Naaman, but can I just add a PS to the story? Because there's somebody else in the story that I think is well worth thinking about. And it was a wee girl who, if she looked in the mirror, what did she see? She saw someone who was a slave. She saw herself living away from home. She saw herself told what to do by her bosses. But also, she had something in her life that other people didn't know. There was a secret about this little girl as well. This little girl knew God. This little girl knew about the power of God. This little girl knew that if her boss Naaman handed over control to God, then God could fix things. But what on earth would this little girl think? I mean, she must have thought, I'm too scared. I couldn't possibly tell anybody that. Maybe she thought, I'm too young. No one is too young. Maybe she thought, I'm too young. But actually, no, that's not the case. No one is too young to be able to speak about God to their friends or to anybody. Maybe she thought, I'm too little. It needs to be a big person that talks about God to other people. No, it's got to be an adult. It's got to be somebody who's qualified. No, that's not the case. And that's not the message from this story. One wee girl, a young girl, a slave girl, actually changes things. I'm too inferior. I'm not important enough. I haven't got the right job. I haven't got the right training. I don't know the right things to say. It couldn't possibly be me that... But yes, it was that little girl that God wanted to use in that story. That little girl was the hinge that turned everything around, the pivot point for Naaman's life. She was the one who brought God into the story. And maybe that's something for you to think about this week as well. Maybe that secret that you've got about being a Christian, about having God in your life, maybe that's something that God is going to ask you to share in this coming week. Maybe that's the challenge for you from this story of Naaman. Because whatever you might think, you're not too young, you're not too little, you're not too inferior. There is no reason at all that you or I can throw up that should stop us talking about God. And that's what this little girl did. And look what a change it made for Naaman. She spoke up. He was humble enough to take God on board and do what God said. And my goodness, what an incredible change. And that actually is the way God plans it, you know. That is how God's message gets out. God planned that he would use people to tell other people about him. Naaman wasn't a Jew. A Jew told someone who wasn't a Jew about God. And that was how God planned it as well. This is how God uses you and me. And that may be the challenge that God is laying down for you and me today. Is there somebody that you know who needs God in control of their lives? It might be that you're the person to tell them. Amen.